locked in tonight. The Michigan senator is set to give the Democratic response. She's been waiting, I'm going to guess, impatiently, because she's going to go next, and it's going to be late and fewer people will see it. The divide in American politics on full display. 3 minutes after he declared that America is back, Democrats started booing and yelling, and that's when Congressman Al Green, Democrat of Texas, was then singled out as being too loud and out of order and unruly, and so the speaker ordered him removed. Just an unbelievable moment. I mean, you remember when Obama was speaking back in 08, and back then the congressman from South Carolina
yelled out,
"You lie," and we were all shocked by that. Tonight, Trump kept going, didn't miss a beat, and continued to list his laundry list of accomplishments. And as you say, John, he didn't say that much about the economy. You're going to have to wonder if that was a missed opportunity tonight.
Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan is here. Margaret.
Well, John and Maurice, this really felt like a campaign rally speech, more slogan than substantive policy, even down to referring to Joe Biden as the worst president in history. You were very diplomatic, John, when you said words that you don't often hear in these chambers like that. These were very raucous lawmakers. The Democratic side thinly attended. You saw pink shirts. You saw signs up protesting Elon Musk, mentioning cuts to Medicaid. That's a reference to a fight in Congress they're about to have over spending and cuts to come. He also, in his speech, the president did ask on the economic front American farmers to bear with him, a reference there to the tariff fight that may escalate with China, Canada, and Mexico. He referred to the Afghanistan withdrawal that he negotiated by saying that he has gotten Pakistan to agree to send one of the terrorists who carried it out here. He had a number of announcements like that, calling people out in the audience, always the showman, and he did that here tonight. But he also, interestingly, made some policy announcements. He said he wants to repeal this bipartisan bill that has this massive investment in computer chips, things that have to do with competition with China. It was interesting that he chose in the chamber tonight to go there.
Wondering what it was like on the floor tonight. Scott McFarland, you are there. Give us a peek, Scott.
Yeah, Maurice, it was a horribly tense feeling in this chamber at moments. After Congressman Green of Houston was ejected, there was this loud, visceral, ugly screaming inside the chamber, directed at Mr. Green, then directed between both parties and each other. There was another moment when Congresswoman Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico was holding up a white sign that said, "This is not normal." A Republican snatched the paper from her hand and threw it across the room. And then there were the protests from some House Democrats. One after another, they walked out mid-speech. At some point, some of them turned their backs on the president, waited there a moment, then departed. Among those who left, Maxwell Frost of Florida, Jasmine Crockett of Texas. But also, there were those empty seats that were so noticeable as the protests continued. And John, Maurice, and Margaret, first time I can remember a State of the Union where the minority party didn't stand once for anything.
Scott McFarland there reporting from the Hall. It was also notable, Scott, since you covered the January 6th prosecutions and also the fallout from it, that the president spoke at length about trusting and protecting law enforcement officers. He, of course, pardoning those in the January 6th attack on the Capitol that attacked officers as well.
He's about to walk out the door that those rioters tried to enter January 6, 2021. He's about to walk out that very door.
The president mentioned his predecessor a lot during the congressional address, and Weijia Zhang is at the White House. Weijia, this was as much of a campaign speech as you can have or at least as we've ever seen in that venue.
Yeah, there were so many points, John, where he sounded like candidate Trump and not President Trump. It's one thing to lay the blame on the Biden administration to explain why we are in this situation with the economy. His advisors have been saying we've only been here for 6 weeks. But the real issue here is what he is going to do about it. And White House officials said that Trump would lay out a specific plan and talk about all the things that his team would be doing to bring down prices. But the things he talked about were things that were not new and things that require time. And we know that when it comes to economic policy, time is not on a president's side. when people are expecting immediate relief. So he talked about domestic energy production. He talked about waste, fraud, and abuse. And he talked about dealing with the bird flu. But, John, he did not really answer what he's doing right now to bring down the prices.
Okay, Weijia Jiang at the White House, thank you. And coming up, the Democratic response to the president's address to Congress. You are watching CBS News.
Direct questions. I don't know that they're tough questions per se. When do consumers actually get to touch and feel a difference in their lives? So you would encourage Democrats to work with Donald Trump on an issue like health care. That's the role of Face the Nation, to focus on the issues at hand. That means a civil conversation with perspective.
Sunday morning, Wicked Oscar nominee Cynthia Erivo, a few words from Flo, plus 100 years of The New Yorker. Listen for the trumpet.
It was almost like being face-to-face with the devil.
Women riding bicycles dismembered.
She just vanished.
48 hours reports.
I fought and fought.
911, what is your emergency?
She disappeared off the face of the earth.
Ever think in your wildest dreams someone might want to kill you?
This almost became a game of psychological warfare.
You're caught. You're gonna go down.
Stream 48 hours, 24/7. CBS Sunday Night.
Here we go.
The ultimate tradition continues.
And what I've seen, it's like chaos.
America's longest running news magazine show is back.
For 60 minutes!
60 minutes.
With a new season.
Hey, let's go.
You're willing to talk about anything. I'm open to all of it. Ask me the hard-hitting questions.
So how do you get over the nerves?
Honestly, it's a whole bunch of mind
The most influential people.
Who's the best coach in college football?
Let me see a mirror. I can look at it.
Are you a billionaire yet?
None of your business. Are you trying to get me robbed?
Investigative journalism.
Am I getting a real look at what life is like in here today? Absolutely not.
Do you think people visiting know that these were looted?
When stories threaten our way of life, 60 Minutes demands answers.
This is the pager that Hezbollah was using.
Do you have hope that you may find him yet?
They were asking me to do something that was illegal.
They're fighting for faulty parts?
Yeah.
What is the most important takeaway for our audience?
How big of a problem is doping? Where was the military?
Why are people suspicious?
That sounds like a problem.
How was this possible?
Oh, come on.
Come on.
Whoa.
Wow.
What is going on?
I'm Scott Pelley.
I'm John Wirth.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi.
I'm Cecilia Vega.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
This is 60 Minutes.
The CBS News original.
Showtime, baby.
To President Trump's address from Senator Alyssa Slotkin.
But before that, we're going to hear from our own Nicole Killian, who is going to tell us why Slotkin was picked. Nicole?
Well, as is the case with these rebuttals, often the minority party will pick a rising star within their ranks, and that includes a congresswoman or who used to be a congresswoman, Senator Elisa Slotkin, who won Michigan, of course, by a very narrow margin, but was really a bright spot in the 2024 election, despite some pretty major losses for the Democrats. So this is an opportunity to try to chart a path forward in terms of Democrats' messaging and strategy and deliver a strong rebuttal to the president's message tonight.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. We're going to listen now to Senator Elisa Slotkin.
So I promise to be a lot shorter than what you just watched. I won't take it personally if you've never heard of me. I'm the new senator from the great state of Michigan, where I grew up. I've been in public service my entire life because I happened to be in New York City on 9/11 when the Twin Towers came down. Before the smoke cleared, I knew I wanted to make a life in national security. I was recruited by the CIA and did 3 tours in Iraq alongside the military. In between, I worked at the White House under President Bush and President Obama, 2 very different leaders who both believed that America is exceptional. You can find that same sense of patriotism here in Wyandotte, Michigan, where I'm speaking from tonight. It's a working-class town just south of Detroit. President Trump and I both won here in November. It might not seem like it, but plenty of places like this still exist across the United States. Places where people believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should do well and your kids should do better. It reminds me of how I grew up. My dad was a lifelong Republican, my mom a lifelong Democrat. But it was never a big deal because we had shared values that were bigger than any one party. We just went through another fraught election season. Americans made it clear that prices are too high and that the government needs to be more responsive to their needs. America wants change, but there's a responsible way to make change and a reckless way. And we can make that change without forgetting who we are as a country and as a democracy. So that's what I'm going to lay out tonight. Because whether you're from Wyandotte or Wichita, most Americans share 3 core beliefs: that the middle class is the engine of our country, that strong national security protects us from harm, and that our democracy, no matter how messy, is unparalleled and worth fighting for. Let's start with the economy. Michigan literally invented the middle class, the revolutionary idea that you could work at an auto plant and afford the car you were building. That's the American dream. And in order to expand and protect the middle class, we have to do a few basic things. We need to bring down the price of things we spend the most money on: groceries, housing, healthcare. We need to make more things in America with good-paying union jobs, and bring our supply chains back home from places like China. We need to give American businesses the certainty they need to invest and create the jobs of the future. And we need a tax system that's fair for people who don't happen to make $1 billion. Look, the president talked a big game on the economy, but it's always important to read the fine print. So, do his plans actually help Americans get ahead? Not even close. President Trump is trying to deliver an unprecedented giveaway to his billionaire friends. He's on the hunt to find trillions of dollars to pass along to the wealthiest in America. And to do that, he's going to make you pay in every part of your life. Grocery and home prices are going up, not down, and he hasn't laid out a credible plan to deal with either of those. His tariffs on allies like Canada will raise prices on energy, lumber, and cars, and start a trade war that will hurt manufacturing and farmers. Your premiums and prescriptions will cost more because the math on his proposals doesn't work without going after your health care. Meanwhile, for those keeping score, the national debt is going up, not down. And if he's not careful, he could walk us right into a recession. And one more thing. In order to pay for his plan, he could very well come after your retirement, the Social Security, Medicare, and VA benefits you worked your whole life to earn. The president claims he won't, but Elon Musk just called Social Security the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. While we're on the subject of Elon Musk, is there anyone in America who is comfortable with him and his gang of 20-year-olds using their own computer servers to poke through your tax returns, your health information, and your bank accounts? No oversight, no protections against cyber attack, no guardrails on what they do with your private data. We need a more efficient government. You want to cut waste? I'll help you do it. But change doesn't need to be chaotic or make us less safe. The mindless firing of people who work to protect our nuclear weapons, keep our planes from crashing, and conduct the research that finds the cure for cancer, only to rehire them 2 days later? No CEO in America could do that without being summarily fired. Okay, so we've talked about economic security. How about national security? Let's start with the border. As someone who spent my whole career protecting our homeland, every country deserves to know who and what is coming across its border. Period. Democrats and Republicans should all be for that. But securing the border without actually fixing our broken immigration system is dealing with the symptom and not the disease. America is a nation of immigrants. We need a functional system keyed to the needs of our economy that allows vetted people to come and work here legally. So I look forward to the president's plan on that. Because here's the thing. Today's world is deeply interconnected. Migration, cyber threats, AI, environmental destruction, terrorism. One nation cannot face these issues alone. We need friends in all corners, and our safety depends on it. President Trump loves to say peace through strength. That's actually a line he stole from Ronald Reagan. But let me tell you, after the spectacle that just took place in the Oval Office last week, Reagan must be rolling in his grave. We all want an end to the war in Ukraine, but Reagan understood that true strength required America to combine our military and economic might with moral clarity. And that scene in the Oval Office wasn't just a bad episode of reality TV. It summed up Trump's whole approach to the world. He believes in cozying up to dictators like Vladimir Putin and kicking our friends like the Canadians in the teeth. He sees American leadership as merely a series of real estate transactions. As a Cold War kid, I'm thankful it was Reagan and not Trump in office in the 1980s. Trump would have lost us the Cold War. Donald Trump's actions suggest that in his heart, he doesn't believe we're an exceptional nation. He clearly doesn't think we should lead the world. Look, America is not perfect, but I stand with the majority of Americans who believe we are still exceptional, unparalleled. And I would rather have American leadership over Chinese or Russian leadership any day of the week. Because for generations, America has offered something better. Our security and our prosperity, yes, but our democracy, our very system of government, has been the aspiration of the world. And right now, it's at risk. It's at risk when the president decides you can pick and choose what rules you want to follow, when he ignores court orders and the Constitution itself, or when elected leaders stand by and just let it happen. But it's also at risk when the president pits Americans against each other, when he demonizes those who are different and tells certain people they shouldn't be included. Because America is not just a patch of land between two oceans. We are more than that. Generations have fought and died to secure the fundamental rights that define us. Those rights and the fight for them make us who we are. We're a nation of strivers, risk takers, innovators, and we are never satisfied. That is America's superpower. And look, I've lived and worked in many countries. I've seen democracies flicker out. I've seen what life is like when a government is rigged. You can't open a business without paying off a corrupt official. You can't criticize the guys in charge without getting a knock at the door in the middle of the night. So as much as we need to make our government more responsive to our lives today, don't for one moment fool yourself that democracy isn't precious and worth saving. But how do we actually do that? I know a lot of you have been asking that question. First, don't tune out. It's easy to be exhausted. But America needs you now more than ever. If previous generations had not fought for this democracy, where would we be today? Second, hold your elected officials, including me, accountable. Watch how they're voting. Go to town halls and demand they take action. That's as American as apple pie. Third, organize. Pick just one issue you're passionate about and engage. And doom scrolling doesn't count. Join a group that cares about your issue and act. And if you can't find one, start one. Some of the most important movements in our history have come from the bottom up. In closing, We all know that our country is going through something right now. We're not sure what the next day is going to hold, let alone the next decade. But this isn't the first time we've experienced significant and tumultuous change as a country. I'm a student of history, and we've gone through periods of political instability before. And ultimately, we've chosen to keep changing this country for the better. But every single time, we've only gotten through those moments because of two things: engaged citizens and principled leaders. Engaged citizens who do a little bit more than they're used to doing to fight for the things that they care about, and principled leaders who are ready to receive the ball and do something about it. So thank you tonight for caring about your country. Just by watching, you qualify as engaged citizens. And I promise that I and my fellow Democrats will do everything in our power to be the principled leaders that you deserve. Good night, everyone.
The Democratic response there tonight from freshman Michigan Senator Elisa Slotkin. She promised she'd keep it short. That was about 10 minutes. The president tonight spoke for an hour and 40. Let's get our final thoughts here tonight from our team in Washington. Let's start with Major Garrett. Major, what'd you see tonight?
So I've learned to be humble about analyzing speeches like this because the country often catches on to things that those of us in Washington might not sift the way the country does. When the president listed things that he thought were extravagant examples of wasteful spending, those of us around this table might say, well, that's not going to be enough, even if you cut all that to balance the budget, which is $840 billion out of balance. But Americans will hear it and say, wait a minute, those things sound wasteful to me. Sounds like Elon Musk and the president are on to something. There was also tremendous emotive power in several parts of the speech that I think will resonate across the country. Whether it's Lake and Riley slain, her mother and sister, or Mark and his mother, Malphine Fogel, rescued or brought back from Russia, or a Border Patrol agent, Roberto Ortiz, or Stephanie Diller, the surviving spouse of a slain New York City police officer. Those things carry emotional weight, not only in the moment, but probably inevitably in the pass around social media dissection of this speech. I keep my eyes and ears tuned to emotional moments like that that often jump over the instantaneous beltway analysis.
Robert Costa is also down there in Washington. Bob, what'd you make of the speech?
John, a brief reflection on what we just heard. So many Americans watched President Trump tonight and saw Democrats walking out of the chamber. Others were holding up signs calling Elon Musk someone who's stealing from the country. There was a lot of anger and frustration among the Democrats on the House floor. Talking to Democrats tonight via text message, those watching the speech, they see in Senator Slotkin a glimmer of hope for the party as it looks towards 2025 and 2026. A young female lawmaker, someone with national security credentials. They look at Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, someone with a similar profile running for governor of Virginia this year. And they know the party is facing its challenges as it faces off against President Trump and these Republican majorities in Congress. But they're trying to find their footing. And tonight they look at Senator Slotkin and her message about the economy, an approachable tone, and they're hoping this maybe sets the mark for them when it comes to competing with President Trump, who right now certainly, in the eyes of both Democrats and Republicans I've spoken with, has his grip firmly on power in Washington and in the world.
Okay, Robert Costa, thank you. As we bring in Nancy Cordes here, the polls we looked at and we have here at CBS, Nancy, show that people wanted to hear more about the economy tonight. I'm wondering if you thought the president did enough of that.
It's interesting, Maurice. This is a president who doesn't like to admit weakness very often. And yet, in his speech tonight, he did admit that there could be some temporary downsides to the tariffs that he says he is determined to impose around the world. He said that there could be a bit of an adjustment period. He said there may be a little disturbance in prices, which is a big admission when you consider that voters tell us time and time again that their biggest issue is inflation. Still, the president said he is not changing course. He plans to impose those reciprocal tariffs. He said, whatever they tariff us, we'll tariff them. If you don't make your product in America, you will pay a tariff, and in some cases, a rather large one. He insists that in the long run, this will help the U.S. economy, bringing companies back from overseas. But so many Americans right now are worried about the short run.
Nancy Cordes in Washington. Thank you, Nancy. That's going to be the last word. Thank you to our team here at CBS News and for all of you for sticking with us and watching us with our coverage of the president's address to Congress. It'll continue on your local news and tomorrow on CBS Mornings. I'm John Dickerson with Maurice Dubois.
Have a good night.
Good night.
You've got a couple of thoughts about Judge Schimel's lame conclusion that there was no intent in this case. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, so not only did he get the case law obviously wrong, as you mentioned, that intent doesn't even matter. It's worse than that, because his ruling suggests there was no bad intent by the chair of the school board when his behavior is prima facie evidence that there was bad intent. It's like obvious on the plane of it and then on, you know, on the nose of your face. And not only that, but this school board chair lied to other elected officials, the other members of the school board, when he said this was a 4-2. So is that some kind of fraudulent activity? I mean, he sent this in some kind of, you know, wired communication, a Zoom. So you've got that going on. But then you have the judge, Mr. Schimel, who not only erroneously ruled on the case law itself, but erroneously said there was no bad intent when there very clearly was, which means Judge Schimel has shown malice against the rule of law.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jesse. And to just add some emphasis to what Jesse from Madison just said, and thank you for the very insightful call and the dropping of a little legalese Latin for all of our listeners today. I love it. Prima facie evidence, meaning evidence that in its first instance, in the most reasonable and obvious interpretation, clearly lend to an inference of bad faith here or bad intent. And that is the fact that A, he used secret communications, B, did so a number of iterations, was actively misreporting the results of same. For a circuit court judge, any judge, to conclude that, oh, I'll just decide that that was good intent, because eventually when he got called out and the open records were requested, that showed that there was no bad intent. Yes, the facts on their face give just an equal, I think, if not more persuasive interpretation that would lend itself to the conclusion that the chair was operating in bad faith. Jeff, what should voters glean from this as they go into the polling places in early voting and on April 1st to decide if this man who can't read basic case law correctly or our statutes correctly should be a Supreme Court justice?
Well, sure. I just want to say at this juncture in our conversation that Law Forward is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization and doesn't take sides in elections. But this is an important case. We see so many TV commercials, right, that tell us, oh, they're slinging mud back and forth about who's going to follow the law, who's not going to follow the law. This is a concrete example where common sense and established precedent point in the same direction. And this is an important issue of law that is about our democracy and is about how our government works. And Judge Schimel was once the attorney general of this state, and which means he was in charge of enforcing these transparency laws. This is not something new to him. This is not something where he didn't know. And I think that people should be looking at this and thinking about, what do I learn about how he sees democracy and the law? And what do I learn about how he thinks about precedent based on this case?
I'll tell you what I think. The man can't read case law, can't get it right, and especially, most importantly, when it comes to transparency in government, egads, what hot water we would be in as a state if he is elected to the Supreme Court. My opinion, not my great guest, Jeff Mandel's of Law Forward. Can't wait to have you back, Jeff. Many thanks. Up next, we've got County Executive David Crowley talking about the impact to you and yours from the MAGA cuts to the benefits that we all rely upon. Next on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump addresses Congress and Americans.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Trump says tariffs bring a little disturbance to the U.S. economy.
Whenever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them.
The president claims the U.S. maybe suffered, quote, the worst inflation in 48 years, perhaps in the history of our country, unquote. CBS fact-checking finds that partially true. The rate of inflation in June 2022 was the highest since 1981, but not the highest of all time. Meantime, early in the speech, Democratic Congressman Al Green of Texas was removed from the chamber for booing and shouting at the president.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House. Mr. President, you continue.
Thank you.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks in Atlanta to take on the Hawks. Bucks guard Kyle Kuzma dealing with a sprained right ankle after accidentally stepping on the foot of Giannis Antetokounmpo during Saturday's game in Dallas. But Kuzma pleased they've won six of their last seven games.
Yeah, we're moving in the right direction, and we've had some hiccups. That's to be expected, but you know, I had a coach in the past. He's always said that the regular season is just rehearsal for the playoffs. That's just the approach that we kind of have to have, and obviously you want to win, and every game is going to have a different challenge.
Baseball, the Brewers losing to the Reds 5-4 in Cactus League action. Left-hander Aaron Ashby had to leave the game with apparently a strained oblique muscle. The Brewers have signed veteran lefty Jose Quintana to a one-year deal. NFL, the Packers agreeing to a two-year deal with linebacker Isaiah McDuffie, worth around $9 million with incentives. McDuffie, a sixth-round pick for Green Bay 5 years ago. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Kieran Culkin is now an Oscar winner, having won the award for Best Supporting Actor last Sunday night. However, if Culkin had his way, someone else would have won. Just 2 weeks before the film written by Jesse Eisenberg was to start shooting, Culkin said he almost quit because the last season of Succession went on longer than anticipated and he wanted to spend time with his family. Culkin also won the Golden Globe and Screen Actors Guild Award for his performance. Being a good dad only goes so far. Speaking of the Culkins, Kieran Culkin has come a long way from playing Fuller McAllister in Home Alone alongside his brother Macaulay. Macaulay attended after parties with his wife Brenda and said he knew his younger brother was going to win because of where they sat him in proximity to the stage. The older Culkin was asked if he would see his brother later that night, and his response was, "I'm not sure. He's a busy guy." He's now Academy Award-winning actor Kieran Culkin. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Rain to snow late tonight. Winter storm warning for accumulations of 2 to 6 inches and strong wind gusts higher than 40 miles an hour, producing widespread blowing snow. Snow continues through tomorrow afternoon, staying windy. Temps fall from the 30s to 20s.
It's 39 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Can our NATO allies continue to rely on the United States under President Trump? What is your take, Professor Barrington?
The conversation had been going into Friday. Can Europe just get a seat at the table for these negotiations? The right question now is, can Europe build a new table? And I think that's where they are. February 28th, 2025 is going to be remembered as, a pretty key date.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs Hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
We are joined Wednesday morning by Congressman Mark Pocan for an update on Elon Musk's wrecking ball and what Democrats can do to push back.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Use a beautiful day and some sun beating down and the radio on and each and every one of you. But instead, we've got a Trump quasi-State of the Union. Thank goodness we've got my very special next guest to join us to help us make sense of it all. It is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley joining us from the Longworth Building in the halls of Congress. Welcome back to the show, David. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
I was very impressed and a wee bit surprised that you were so specific and issued a press release in response to the House budget resolution. Tell us why you did so and what you're concerned about, David.
Well, I think it's important that everybody, not just within Milwaukee County, but in southeastern Wisconsin, in the states and across this country, people are paying attention to what is actually happening in Congress. That's one of the reasons why I'm out here today on Capitol Hill, you know, working with many of my counterparts through the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference. And what I'm really afraid of is not being able to deliver the promises that we say that we're going to deliver when it comes down to local units of government. And so we've been here, one, representing not just Milwaukee County, but the chair of the Large Urban Counties Caucus, where we've been prioritizing and having conversations about the cuts that we don't want to see. First and foremost, I think there are many people in this community who understand that cuts to Medicaid, and particularly cuts to Medicare, are extremely crucial. We do not want to see that happening in our communities. We know how that's not only going to affect our seniors, but we know how that's going to affect our children, and not just in urban centers, but in many rural areas. And so we really want folks to, we want them to focus on the true impacts for issues that affect urban counties like Milwaukee. Like, what are we doing to increase, you know, the mental health and substance use investments? How are we investing in transportation and infrastructure, focusing on health like maternal and infant mortality, housing accessibility, things that the American people really care about? And so I'm glad to be here. But again, I'm here talking to legislators, talking to congressional members, working with my counterparts. But I am not here to hear the president speak tonight.
I can't blame you for that. I would be skipping it myself. It wasn't part of my gosh darn job every day. Just to put not too fine a point on it, Medicaid covers one in five people in the United States, including nearly half of all of our children. That is one in two children receive health benefits and supports in some way through Medicaid, including as well over 8 million seniors. In Wisconsin, more than 1.2 million people are enrolled in Medicaid, including well over 60% of senior citizens that are in residential nursing home facilities. These cuts would be devastating across the state of Wisconsin. David, what have you been hearing from folks across the country, other county leaders, both urban and rural counties, at the National Counties Association Legislative Caucus meetings? And what are you hearing from Wisconsinites and Milwaukeeans about these proposed cuts?
Well, what I can tell you is that being out here is a great opportunity. You meet different people from different states that have different issues than you. And I have to tell you about a conversation that I actually had last night, right? I met a guy from rural Minnesota who happens to be a huge Trump supporter. And when we were having the conversation about what is happening in the federal government and how we're feeling the squeeze, particularly at the local level within counties, one of the things that he kept talking about was the fact that these Medicare and Medicaid cuts will be extremely impactful on their community. They have a community of about 18,000, right? But majority of their population are seniors and they're living in long-term care facilities. And so for them, they're wondering, how are we going to pay these bills? How are we going to be able to take care of our entire population if he's going to be making you know, these types of cuts to the Medicare and Medicaid program. And so not only am I hearing that from rural places and, you know, from our rural members within the National Association of Counties, but even back at home, there are many people. When we think about the children that are going to be affected by these cuts, should alarm every single one of us. I think many people forget that close to about 40% of the people who are on Medicaid are children, right? Or Medicare, these are children, right? We are literally we're having a conversation about removing healthcare access, healthcare services from our youngest and most vulnerable population right here in our own community. And we just, quite frankly, we can't have that. But I do think this is an opportunity, right? An opportunity for many of your listeners, everyone in our community, to start standing up and making sure to speak out. And so I want to encourage everyone, right? You know, you can make phone calls, but many of those voicemails are not full. And they may not even be checking the voicemails because they don't want to talk to you. So let's make sure that we're sending an email. Let's make sure that we're utilizing social media. And when you send that email, right, make sure that you're even talking to the people who are on your side. Have them copied on these emails so we can have a paper trail to everyone who's receiving these so we understand how to bring the level of accountability that's needed in order to stop these cuts.
David, if I may ask, would you want either your campaign or Milwaukee County copied on those emails? And if so, what email address should folks put in their CC lines as they reach out to Congressman Van Orten, Stile, Fitzgerald, Grothman, and Weed here in the Wisconsin delegation?
Absolutely. You can definitely email us. Our email is countyexec@milwaukeecountywi.gov. But I will say we have great champions in Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Mark Pocan, as well as Congresswoman Gwen Moore. And you should be copying them as well on that email so they can have a trail and be able to bring that to their colleagues.
Folks, we'll put all of those emails for Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Congressman Mark Pocan, as well as the email that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley just mentioned. County Executive, we're on day two of pretty significant losses in the market with Donald Trump's announcement that he is going to be moving forward with crippling tariffs that are going to hurt farmers in Wisconsin, costing them billions in revenues, tariffs applying to China, Canada, and Mexico. As people look forward, Donald Trump admittedly and self-proclaiming that he was elected based on grocery prices. What should Wisconsinites be thinking about next as we enter this phase of a trade war with some of our largest trading partners, both in this hemisphere and with China?
Well, one, all of us should be extremely concerned about what is happening right now. Not only will this raise prices for many businesses in our community, but this is going to raise prices on consumers. And we can see an immediate effect because I think many people may not know right here in the state of Wisconsin, we rely on a lot of energy coming from Canada, right? When we think about the gas that we're putting into our cars every single day, you know, that crude oil is coming from Canada. So this is going to affect our pocketbooks. And so we're going to see these increases. But this is why we need people to get involved, right? I know we are elected officials, and I'm letting folks, I want folks to understand that we are fighting every single day to make sure that our representatives right here in Congress understand what these impacts are going to be. And this is also going to, you know, stifle our ability when it comes down to local units of government to really, you know, take hold and really continue to invest in those safety net programs because we won't be able to invest in those programs due to the rising costs. Right. We're seeing inflation. We're seeing the rise in all of these prices. And look, Donald Trump doesn't care about anybody but his damn self. I'm just saying it like it is. And so until we get our congressional members to do the right thing, to stand up, particularly in the Republican Party, stand up to the mess that we're seeing, it's going to be very difficult for us to be able to dig ourselves out of this hole. And so I want the people to understand that we all have a role to play when it comes down to stopping the bad things that's happening within the federal government. And so let's make sure that we do everything that we can. But right now, you know, we're talking to our state members as well. And thank God for Governor Tony Evers trying to think ahead as far as what investments we need to make in this 2025, 2027 budget. because he's thinking about how these cuts are going to affect everybody across the entire state of Wisconsin. And so you should be also calling your representative, your state senator, and letting them know how you support this particular budget and how we need to move forward in general and standing up, quite frankly, to dictatorship right here in our country.
Folks, that's Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley talking about all of the potential impacts, not just on Milwaukee County residents, but across the state of Wisconsin, as the confluence, as the intersection of these middle class crushing policy decisions by the Trump administration begin to come down the pike. That's the next question I wanted to ask you, David. We've talked about the House budget resolution and how it proposes absolutely life-threatening cuts to both Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food assistance that feeds so many of our families here in the state of Wisconsin. The intersection of those cuts, the proposed cuts that are coming to Social Security and Medicare as well, the intersection of that with this trade war with Canada, Mexico, and China, I can't imagine. It's like we're walking right into the Bermuda Triangle of middle class badness. I can't imagine an agenda that is more anti-working person, anti-merit, anti-middle right. class than what we've got now. How should individuals, in addition to reaching out to their elected officials, are there tips or thinking that you have about how people should be preparing for this grave period of uncertainty and potential economic hardship?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, one, I don't want folks to, you know, run out and go to the grocery store right now trying to stock up on tissue and all these different things.
Don't do that.
Yeah, we don't need that, right? But again, I think right now it's really about, one, we have to create our own networks, right? And I think this is really going to, you know, kind of force people to, one, get to know your neighbors a little bit more, right? Understanding who lives in your neighborhood, what are the needs that people may have? So because we're going to have to lean on one another, right? And so many people may not be able to afford that milk or those eggs. And so how are we working as a community to make sure that we're leaning on one another to get through this, quite frankly, this uncertain period of time in our lives? And this is something that we haven't quite seen before, because usually there's an end goal. Right. Yeah. There's no end goal when it comes down to this. We are just seeing someone who is making erratic decisions because they feel like they need to be a bully to Canada and Mexico, to be quite frank. But these are our neighbors. And one, we need to make sure that we're embracing one another locally, but also across the entire state of Wisconsin. These cuts are not going to just affect one county, one city, one town, or one municipality. It's going to affect all of us. And so we're going to have some conversations about what we need to do at the state level. Again, leaning on our state government, leaning on Governor Evers and our legislators to do the right thing and making sure to repair the harm that we see coming down this pipeline.
Prepare and repair. Words from Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. I really want to elevate and lift up, David, your affirmation that we need to be looking out for one another, our neighbors, our colleagues. How are people doing? Look, if you have an extra couple of shekels, if you have a little bit of extra time, some donations, looking out for those who may find themselves in food insecurity or housing insecurity, to get involved with our election process. And of course, to be sure that you are registered and ready to vote, get your voting done before April 1st. And if you can't do that, make a plan to vote on April 1st. Bring a buddy, bring a friend, bring a family member. But let's get it done, Wisconsin, on April 1st. David, I just want to say to you, my most heartfelt thanks for all of your work on behalf of Milwaukee County at the National Counties Association Legislative Conference this week. And please, to all of my former colleagues and friends at Milwaukee County, give them my best. Tell them to keep up the good fight. We're all counting on them. Folks, it's
Absolutely.
Been my big pleasure to talk with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Also, a good quotable this afternoon: Donald Trump just looking out for his damn self. Hear, hear, David. It's always good to talk to you. Folks, when we come back, I'll give you my final thoughts on this very busy Tuesday of news as we look to a Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class here in this country. Keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You've got some thoughts, I want to hear them. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Back with more in just a moment.
locally grown radio, WFHR. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian Lomax, defend the vote.
The SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. Now you need a passport. Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. Now it's $130 per passport.
Even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months-long process. Unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Trump and Vance verbally assaulted the president of Ukraine, an ally of the U.S. Trump defending the president of Russia, a known dictator. This is a complete capitulation to our sworn enemies. And it's time for Republicans, my former party that I left in 2011, to speak the hell up. Because if we don't, it's not going to be long before we don't have anything left to defend.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. We are indeed going to have to ride the storm out. The Bermuda Triangle coming for the middle class here in Wisconsin. I think many of us are about to be crushed by Donald Trump's misguided, self-interested policy proposals. Let me explain, and then we're going to go to the phone lines, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Here are the three pieces of the Bermuda Triangle that Donald Trump has whipped up that are going to, I think, crush the middle class and working folks in this country. The first is, of course, a trade war with China, Canada, and Mexico. He's signed on to it. It's official. This is going to make housing more expensive. It's going to devastate agriculture. It's going to drive up prices at the gas pumps. Remember those little stickers that they put on with Joe Biden pointing, saying, I did this. We're about to have that happen here. The second stool. And Kelvin, am I getting a little static here? Because I'm going to pop out and come back in. Here we do, folks.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We've had a great show today. We talked to Jeff Mandel from Law Forward. He had a lot to say about Brad Schimmel running for the Supreme Court race. I really suggest you go and check that out. It is the first half hour of this hour, and Maggie is back.
Hey, Kelvin and everybody. Yes, at least once a show, we got a little fuzz on it. I was explaining the Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class. The first is the trade war. It's going to make everything more expensive. And those costs will be passed on to you. It's going to create inflationary pressures. When we did this the first time, when Trump did this in his first administration, and by the way, he had to take over $26 billion of your tax dollars to shore up agriculture in the form of direct payments to farmers after their businesses were devastated because China basically stopped importing agricultural products from the United States. When this happened the first time, we were in a very low inflationary environment. We're not there now. So not only is the trade war going to make everything more expensive, it's going to drive up inflation. So hold your horses. You think housing is expensive now? Just wait. It's going to get worse. Leg number two of the Bermuda Triangle coming to you and for you, courtesy of Donald Trump, is this attack on government benefits that people have earned, like Social Security, veterans benefits, Medicaid, Medicare, food assistance programs. This coupled on the second leg with this unbelievable dismantling of the federal government. Now, listen, I will always advocate so strongly for doing everything that we should to curb fraud, waste, and abuse, to audit and improve government, and in some places, maybe reimagine government, to do things entirely different, to make sure it is efficient and effective for the middle class. But willy-nilly cuts made by a bunch of pimply, barely out of pubescence technocrats who have never worked in government before, who are in their early 20s, all orchestrated by a billionaire overlord, ain't the way to get there, folks. And the third leg of the stool is the rank corruption. Money in politics is bad. I hate it when Democrats take it, when Republicans take it. But you know what's worse? Unelected billionaires deciding how our federal government's going to be run. You know what's worse? A president issuing his own cryptocurrency and accepting $200 billion in purchases and acting like it's not some sort of violation of self-dealing. All of this is so, so very bad. And when you look at the corruption in light of what they are going to fund with all of these benefit cuts and so-called efficiency measures, which is simply tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations, doesn't have to be this way. I'm all for smarter, better, more effective government. And I'm going to tell you this, it ain't what Trump's doing. And just because he says it is, doesn't make it so. Let's go to the phones. Ollie from the Northwoods, you're up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead.
Well, to go along with what David Crowley just was talking about, yesterday I had contacted Governor Evers' office and proposed a plan that I call We Care Wisconsin, Empathy in Action, and just said that the government could help the farmers, and private groups could help finance farmers in exchange for farmers hiring federal workers, and farmers could also donate a portion of their unsold produce because of the tariffs. They could donate some of that to school lunch programs, and then also take some students onto their farms and teach them the importance of farming and growing their own food.
Ollie, I love these ideas, and I think this is right in the exact lane that we should be thinking. How can we work together to support our farmers, our neighbors, our young people, especially as we're being told by Donald Trump and the MAGAs? The government isn't in the business of making sure everybody's okay anymore. Government ain't in the business of supporting the middle class and working people. It's in the business of tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations. And, you know, maybe 20-aught billion in contracts for the billionaire overlord, Elon Musk. No self-dealing here. Nothing to see here, folks. Oy vey. We'll be back tomorrow. I've got Senator Hasselbein for broad appeal at 3 p.m. Don't miss that. My name's Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a couple of guest hosts in for Dom Salvia up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Take care.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me as we find out what happened to USAID with Christina Dry, speechwriter and communications analyst for the agency.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Matt Nair on air.
A lot of federal employees got this fork in the road letter. You can stay, but you're not really guaranteed anything. Luann's husband is a Vietnam veteran.
I wrote a letter to President Musk. My husband put his life on the line for our country.
Wow.
You are putting my husband's life on the line right now by cutting all those programs that are keeping him alive at the VA. Please call your legislators and tell them to stand up. This is not what America is.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump takes credit for swift and unrelenting action in an almost two-hour-long speech to Congress. He has called for the extension of his first-term tax cuts and additional federal funding for his border crackdown, including for his promised efforts at mass deportation of people in the U.S. illegally.
The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation. We must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
On tariffs, he says,
if they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market.
President Trump's 25% tariffs on all goods imported from Canada drew swift vows of retaliation,